KQED.
From KQED Public Radio at Whistle Stop Active Aging Center in San Rafael, I'm Michael Krasny. 20% of California's seniors 65 and above are still working or looking for a job. For some, it's about maintaining social connections and a sense of purpose, while others can't afford to retire. Inadequate savings, pensions, and retirement benefits all play a role in growing workforce participation. And coming up, we discuss working after retirement, and we want to hear from you. If you're a senior in the workforce, why are you still working? That's all next after this news. Welcome to Forum at Whistle Stop Active Agency Center in San Rafael, and we have a live audience with us here. I'm Michael Krasny. More than 900,000 California seniors 65 and older are working or seeking work, an increase of more than 50% since the year 2009. That's according to the U.S. Census Bureau. For many, that can mean staying with a job they love or choosing to volunteer for a cause. But for a growing number of people, retirement is not economically feasible. Women, people of color, and single adults have higher rates of poverty and tend to work well into their golden years. These job seekers may struggle to keep up with a physically demanding job and often face age discrimination when looking for new work. In this special statewide broadcast, which is part of Graying California, a project of the California Dream Collaboration, we'll hear about why more seniors are working, and we'll discuss efforts to help this growing demographic. And joining us is Nari Reeb. She's Director of Retirement Security Program at UC Berkeley Center for Labor Research and Education. And welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you.
Good morning. Glad to have you. Kevin Prindeville is also with us here. He's Executive Director of Justice and Aging. And welcome, Kevin.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Michael.
Glad to have you as well here. And let me begin, if I could, Nari, with you. And let's begin by talking about the fact that more people are working, more are looking for work. And the fact is we have a big number of elderly in the workforce. The reality is that people are not only working by choice, but they're working in so many cases because they have to be working.
Yes. I want to talk a little bit about the numbers in terms of who's working right now. So seniors right now are about 50% more likely to be working than 20 years ago. Some of that has to do with the fact that we've got more women the generations of women who've actually been participating in the labor market are now retiring. But as you talked about, a lot of this has to do with both the financial need on the one hand, and also on the other end of the spectrum, increased longevity, longer lives for wealth, the top half of the income distribution. And so there's a certain amount of choice for those people in terms of being able to work. And then for the bottom half, it's really about not having the resources to be able to retire.
We're talking about people who just haven't done or were unable to do any savings for the most part, aren't we?
Yeah. So in California, we have a particularly bad problem. We're almost next to the bottom among the 50 states in terms of the number of private sector workers who don't have access to any kind of workplace retirement savings plan. So it's about 60% of private sector workers have no 401k or pension at work. Up some numbers for release in a couple of weeks, but we're looking at roughly that number not having any kind of retirement savings, whether it's in an IRA or a 401k. So what that means is that people are approaching retirement age, and the typical near retirement household has maybe enough assets to, you know, last them about a year or two in terms of income. They don't have the 7 to maybe 11 times your annual income that you need to be able to sustain you through 20 to 25 years of retirement.
So it's kind of, I hate to put it this way, but kind of a class division. I mean, those who are professionals and white collar people are much more able to deal with the fact that they can continue their work, and those who are in the proletariat workforce, so to speak, I mean, particularly because their body begins giving out and they can't do the work, are in a different category altogether.
Yeah, so if you look at the occupational distribution of seniors who are working, you see kind of two or three main clusters. So one that stands out, I was looking at the numbers, lawyers and doctors, right? A lot of health professionals are in that cluster. College professors are actually a fairly large number. And then some small business owners who tend to be higher income. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you have janitors and home care workers, and retail sector workers. And what's interesting is that in professional services, those jobs are not hard on your body. They might be cognitively challenging, but they're not hard on your body. And the kinds of jobs that poor seniors have access to are going to be pretty hard on your body in terms of lifting, squatting. In home care, you have a repetitive motion. And so you have a population that's got higher disability rates, right? And also is getting funneled into more physically challenging jobs.
And you got nearly 30% of the aging population headed into retirement without savings and living longer, we should add. And let me also talk with you, if I could, about the difficulty in finding a job. I mean, those who really need to find a job are often hitting a wall and just not finding work.
So age discrimination is real, and I think it's one of the reasons why in the professional services you have people who can basically, self-employment or people who have job tenure, have protected jobs, are more able to keep working into their 60s, almost to 70 and beyond. And I do think that even in things like the IT sector, once you hit 55 and if you need to find another job, it gets harder and harder. What we saw in the last recession was that, for instance, college-educated senior workers tended to have lower unemployment rates overall. But if they were unemployed, they took much longer trying to find a job. And what often happened is that, there's a slippage between unemployment and retirement. So sometimes on paper, the unemployment rates look pretty low. And what's actually happening on is people are giving up because it's so hard to find a job.
Again, Nuri Rhee is director of the Retirement Security Program at UC Berkeley Center for Labor Research and Education. Kevin Prindeville is Executive Director of Justice in Aging. What are we talking about when we're talking about justice in aging? I mean, it's not just ageism, right?
No, it's much more about how we decide to care for the older adults in our families and communities as a society and making decisions about whether we're going to continue to fight for and guarantee justice for people as they age or whether we're going to stop valuing people just because they've become older. And that's not just about ageism in employment, but it's really about public policy and how we set policies for workplace discrimination, what kind of laws are in place to protect people from discrimination as they grow older, but also what our systems look like, what our economic security systems look like, what our healthcare systems look like throughout the lifespan, and then especially for people as they grow older. You were great about mentioning early in the program that California has the highest rate of senior poverty in the country, about 1 in 5 seniors. And even in places like Marin County that we think of as a more wealthy part of the state, about a quarter of the seniors living in Marin County are economically insecure. They don't have enough income to meet their basic needs. So we need to be thinking differently as a state about how we really provide justice to all older people as they age so that if they have to work, they have opportunities to do so, but increasingly so that for those that can't work, they don't have to work just to have food on the table and a roof over their head.
Well, let's talk about what some of the solutions are as you see it. But first of all, we ought to mention the fact that these economic struggles among so many Californians are tied to families, and they get back to what we talked about in the last hour, the difficulty of taking care or providing home care.
Yeah, absolutely. They're tied to families and the way that families can or can't generate wealth over decades. And for those families where the older adult is economically insecure, the family is having to do more to support that older adult as their needs rise. And then that's less opportunity for the family to build wealth through the generations and to care for themselves as they're going through their middle age and then to build wealth for their younger family. So it's this continuum, this cycle that continues to exacerbate the inequality that we're seeing across the state.
We also see more senior homelessness than ever before now in California.
That's right. In most regions of the state, we see homelessness growing, and it's actually the older population that's among the fastest growing populations in that homeless group. And interestingly, about half of older homeless people are homeless for the first time after age 50. So that tells you it's a different problem than a mental health issue or a substance abuse issue, because that most likely would have occurred earlier in life. Instead, it's the housing crisis, it's loss of employment, it's the inability to get rehired, it's a healthcare expense that was unexpected, or the loss of a spouse now creates just this complete economic crisis for the family and older people living on the streets.
And Kevin, as long as we're talking about economics, UCLA does a project I know annually called the Elder Economic Security Index, and they go county to county. You said here in Marin County, for example, there are serious problems with senior poverty. It's true for every county in California, isn't it?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So, you know, we've been saying that about 1 in 5 seniors in California is poor, but there's another 750,000 seniors that aren't poor enough to be classified as under the poverty level, but they don't have enough to meet their basic economic security needs. In most parts of the state, it's roughly about $25,000 a year that a senior needs to cover housing and healthcare and food. But the median Social Security benefit is just about $15,000 a year. So that's a $10,000 gap right there. And so, you know, people used to fill that gap with pensions, but we know that the value of pensions is decreasing. You know, so many people don't have a vehicle through which to save, or wages have been so flat that even if you have a savings vehicle, you know, a friend of mine used to say you can't save your way out of poverty. You know, if every dollar is going to take care of your kids and your housing, then where do the dollars go to save for later?
And there's a diminution, of course, of benefits, as we spoke of in the last hour. So let's talk with you about solutions, because I know that's what your group is really all about. What do you see, particularly if Governor Newsom's going to be presenting, you know, a map for us? What would the priorities be? What would the triage be?
Yeah, well, first of all, this is a tremendous opportunity. California state government has not paid attention to the growing needs of older adults. We have not had leadership at the state level for too long. But we seem to have that now. We have a governor who is passionate about this issue and who is providing us some momentum and an opportunity to work together to actually plan. So it was just yesterday the executive order came down from Governor Newsom to create this master plan for aging. And, you know, we're saying we've got to really take a comprehensive approach. We can't think of aging as just the services that are run through county departments on aging. We really need to look at how aging impacts every part of state government. It's going to be an increasingly important part of the budget. We need to plan around housing, which I think is one of the most critical needs, and healthcare and long-term care would be the other most critical needs right now. But we need to look at transportation. We need to look at immigration. We need to look at workforce issues. Every part, every policy is aging policy.
They're all connected. There's synergy
between all
of them. But we need to do more than look at them.
That's right. We need to have proactive plans and a way to implement them.
Well, if you're listening to this program, we do invite you to join us. And if you're over 65 and working, please share your experience with us. We invite you to do that. And here in this audience, raise your hand and someone will come to you if you have something you'd like to share with us about your own experience of being in the workplace or wanting to be in the workplace. You can give us a call right now at our toll-free number. We invite you to do that. 866-733-6786 is the number to call. Again, 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions or comments you have to forum@kqed.org. And we'll be talking when we return to a couple of retirees who do work after the break. Stay tuned. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny, and we are live at Whistle Stop in San Rafael. We're talking about working while aging this hour. With us is Nari Ree. She's director of the Retirement Security Program at UC Berkeley's Center for Labor Research and Education, and Kevin Prindeville, who's executive director of Justice and Aging. And if you're over 65 and working, certainly we welcome you sharing your experience with us. You can raise your hand in the audience, or someone will come to you, or you can give us a call. If you're listening to us, 866-733-6786. The number again, 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions or comments you might have to forum@kqed.org. And we're going to go out in the audience now and welcome Maggie Weiss. And Maggie Weiss is a woman who is, like I said, Maggie, are you with us now? There you are. You're an octogenarian. I won't go beyond that. And I'm glad to have you aboard.
Oh, dear.
Well, let's talk to you about, you did retire, and you found out you really didn't like being retired, basically.
Oh, absolutely. I did not like it for a number of reasons, financial and emotional. Retiring has a, sort of a bad connotation, and when I walked in today, I saw this piece of paper, I picked it up, sat down on the chair, and there was my name and my age. I thought I was going to faint. I didn't know what to do because I don't think of myself as 81 years old. I think of myself as Maggie Weiss. Yeah, I work, and so what? And I have seen this, though. I joined the Y. The YWCA did a spectacular job in helping me find my way. I had never had a problem finding a job. I'm vivacious, I'm capable, I know what I'm doing, and I interview well. Well, then...
Maybe on both sides of the microphone.
Yes, right. So then what happens is I found out I needed a job in order to keep my life going in a better way than it was. And I was fortunate enough to be able to find out about the YWCA through my son-in-law, who saw a little ad in the IJ and recommended that I call them, which I did. And I was able to get classes that helped me see a lot of things. The availability for our group, the salaries for our group, which I said, oh, that can't be true. That just can't be true. It's true. So I worked for an agency for a couple of years. I made a lot of money for the agency. I made a lot of money for...
Excuse me, you also asked for a raise, as I understand
it. My point. So I decided to ask for a raise. And they said, well, we don't give raises. And I said, well, why not? I've made a lot of money for you, for the clients. Well, we just don't. And I said, well, this is the amount of money that I expect to be making with you, and I'm sorry that you're not going to do it. I was a little scared, but I was also sincere in what I said. They called me. They just happened to have a job that they needed me for. What a surprise, right? Now, it's not easy to go into any job and demand more money, whether you're 30, 50, or 81. But I believed in myself. I believe in myself now. And then I decided, this is interesting. I'm going to interview myself. I'm going to go into my bathroom, look in the mirror, and ask myself a lot of questions that I've been asked or should be asked. And with all those questions and all those answers, I decided to go into business for myself.
And let me ask you, how are you doing in this new entrepreneurial role?
What am I doing? Well, thank you for the plug. I'm making baby quilts. Making baby quilts because I like to work on small things. I like to do one-of-a-kind things. And my name of my place is The Needle and I.
Boy, there's a good plug. And Maggie, you mind if I ask you a very practical question? Can you live on your pension and benefits, or do you need the income that comes from
work? Well, I had a lucky accident happen. I went to the wrong address for a job, and this man said, well, are you available? And I said, well, yes. And he hired me to work for this company based on 14-second interview. And every time he needs me, I work for them. The owners of his properties use me as a consultant, but I'm still going into business for myself.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. We appreciate that. And we're going to hear from someone else who has retired and decided to go back to work as a volunteer, and that's Phoebe Moyer. She is approaching octogenarianism. She volunteers in various causes, including right here at Whistle Stop. And Phoebe, welcome.
Well, thank you. I think I've been at Whistle Stop about 5 years, and I came in on Friday to help with the brown bag pantry. And
you're the fruit lady, right?
I'm the fruit. How did you know that?
I have to do this.
I'm also the plastic lady. I take all the plastic for recycling. But anyway, there are lots of ways we can help. That was something that just happens serendipitously. I was in a class, and a friend of mine came up, and she said, we need some help Friday. You only have to do it once, and I've been here ever since. I do want to pick up on your person who just spoke. I love the fact that you're not saying my age for sure, Because I think there's one thing that happens lots of times, and I'm still an actor, I'm still a director, I'm still working.
Over with Ross Valley Players.
With Ross Valley Players, and I just did two shows up in Santa Rosa. I did Streetcar Named Desire at the 6th Street Playhouse, then I did a new play.
Wait, you directed Streetcar Named
Desire? I directed, and then I just directed at Left Edge. There's, you see, age has nothing to do with it when you're in the arts.
Can I quote Mark Twain? Because it's a favorite quote of mine. Age is mind over matter. If you don't mind, it doesn't matter.
That's exactly true. And when I audition sometimes, and there's always old lady roles, they will often have age, and you can choose to put it. For years, I have put down less, age less. If I can convince you that I can play a 55-year-old or a 62-year-old or whatever, I'll get the role. Don't let age step in my way.
Well, you mentioned Streetcar Named Desire. A friend of mine by the name of Rita Moreno was in the Berklee Repertory production of Glass Menagerie, and she played Amanda Wingfield, and she played it quite extraordinarily. This is a woman who was born in Puerto Rico, playing, of course, a Southern lady.
Yes, she was terrific. Saw it, yeah.
Well, it's delightful to have you here and to hear your story. Could you tell us a little bit about, well, if you ever see yourself retiring in the sense of not volunteering even?
Oh, I would always volunteer. I think I just was raised in a family. That's what we did. I will always do that. I may have to do it sitting in a, you know, in a boardroom, which I've done sometimes. I've been on a lot of boards that with Actors Equity and so forth, where I'm trying to help the union. But I would say that there is a socialization that happens. We're a family here. And every Friday when we meet, we're checking in on each other and finding out what's going on. That is essential. And that's with theater, which I've been doing. It seems like I was out of the womb. I did theater. I will always be doing that. And if I can't direct or if I can't memorize after a while, I'll take the tickets. But I will be there because it's just a beautiful way to work with people, to work in a creative way, and to collaborate. And that's what I love doing.
And keep going. And thank you so much again for sharing your story.
Okay, you're welcome.
That's Phoebe Moyer. Again, we invite those of you in the audience to join us. We welcome your involvement, and those of you who are listening to us, please feel free to be part of the program, too. And we're going to go, actually, let me talk, Kevin, with you for a moment. We heard some pretty upbeat stories there, but so many of the stories, unfortunately, don't fall into that category or under that rubric.
Yeah, that's right. You know, aging, like everything else in life, there's a wide array of experiences that people have with the aging process. And the experiences that you have when you're older are largely a reflection of the experiences you had when you're younger. So we see that, you know, the inequities that people face throughout a lifetime really show up the most when they're older. So there's different opportunities that people have to volunteer or to be employed or to be self-employed or to engage with their communities, you know. And I should say people engage in different ways too, right? And I do think these themes about how important it is to stay engaged in your community really relate to your previous panel, that aging in place is really about being connected to and surrounded by community. And we as a state from a policy level need to be seeking ways to provide those opportunities for people, whether it is through work or through volunteerism or through other types of social programming that can keep people connected.
And again, Kevin Prindeville is Executive Director of the Justice and Aging. We're going to go to our audience and go to our callers. Let me read a comment first from Rick, who says, I'm 65 and still work full-time. I was lucky to find a job I like and hope to keep it until at least age 70. I basically don't have enough saved to retire and hope to build my nest egg a bit more before quitting. If I was unemployed, as I was during the last recession, I would be really freaked out. And here's another listener. Let me go to you on this, if I could, Nari Ree. This listener writes, Silicon Valley wants everyone to be in their 30s. Corporations are constantly trying to find younger people to replace older people. It doesn't matter how many years of experience you have, even in high-tech fields, they can always make a case against you. Does that seem to conform to your way you see things?
Yeah, and we see this. I mean, it's across the economy. It's particularly age discrimination is a bigger deal in some ways in the IT sector. And it's because, you know, you get cheaper, younger workers who will work around the clock, right, eat dinner, right, at the campus, rather than take care of the families or take care of their own lives. And older workers are comparatively more expensive. So there definitely is age discrimination in Silicon Valley. And, you know, I do understand, though, that you get to a certain level of experience and you do have opportunities for entrepreneurship. It's just that maybe you're not going to be that full-time employee anymore.
And let me just add that we did a program on age discrimination in Silicon Valley on Forum. It's in our archives. And let me go to our audience and I'll go to our listening audience out there in Radio Land. Carmen, join us. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, I'm still working because I live in San Francisco, and I would work for San Francisco Unified, and because of age discrimination, I couldn't get a tenure-track job because I was over 40, so I sued them a zillion times. And one of the things about age discrimination, every lawyer I talked to said it's very hard to prove. So I eventually
got tenure. Did you win your lawsuits, I have to ask?
You know, they kept throwing them out. But what happened, the superintendent, Arlene Ackerman, I befriended her. She backdated my tenure, and I got to be tenured. But, you know, I got tenured late, so my I don't get that much CalSTRS, which is a pension. And the main reason I call these gentlemen, I'm African-American, Native American, and I used to rent rooms. And this one gentleman, he was white, Vietnam vet. He was math science. That's what all the districts say. Oh, we need math teachers. We mean that. He could not get hired either, you know. So, and he had everything. He had the CBES, all the dumb things California wanted you to have. So as a Vietnam vet, I think he should have been snapped up. He eventually got tired of looking. He expanded his circle bigger than me. He went to Oakland, all the, you know, the East Bay schools, as well as San Francisco. So he moved to Oregon.
Carmen, I thank you for your call, and I'm going to go to the audience in just a moment. Let me read a listener comment. I retired about 3 years ago from a full-time faculty position at a community college. I would not be able to make ends meet if it weren't for renting out a room to UC students on Airbnb. Everyone hates these rental agencies, and I understand the negative impact to the long-term rental market, but it is the only thing that works for me. We'll hear from our audience. Kathleen joins us. Kathleen, welcome.
Good morning. I have a couple of comments, follow-up comments on about tech. I live in Marin County, and I am in my 60s, early 60s. And
I like the enthusiasm with which you said that.
Yeah, and I have a track record with a number of consulting firms. My background is finance, and I've been trying to apply for jobs again through the consulting firms, and because I've been hearing about this job shortage. It's an employees market right now. So I thought, well, if I can't get hired in this market, you know, there's something wrong. And so I've been very actively searching for a contract position. And I have a strong track record in consulting. And so I've seen when a contractor is hired, if they don't cut it, they can be out by this, you know, that same afternoon. There's no long-term commitment there. So I'm wondering why they can't take the chance on a 60-year-old. So what happened was I went through all the application process, and there's a question in the questioning process with the agency that says, what year did you graduate? Well, there's the game killer right there, because that's, you know, it's illegal to ask your age, but of course they can ask what year you graduated from college. So, but they did come back and they said, yeah, we have some positions. Unfortunately, you're in Marin. The positions are at Google. And I said, I'd get on the Google bus, no problem. Well, all of a sudden the jobs disappeared. And I just checked, I just Googled the number of outstanding Google jobs, 84,000 currently. So there's a real disconnect. And the other piece of information I'll say is when I Googled my name, the fourth entry that came up was my life, and there was my age blasted all over the internet. So I'm pretty sure that the hiring managers are Googling my name and finding out who I am, and it's game over.
Thank you for raising those are important points. I want to go to Kevin Prindeville because it gets back to justice again. It's so easy to find out an age by asking, as she said, what year you graduated or by going on to Google for that matter. And the reality is there's geographic mixed in this because you live in Marin and they're trying to say you're excluded because you're too far when indeed you were willing to get on the Google bus. You know?
Yeah, well, the ageism that we see throughout society is rampant, and we internalize a lot of that ageism as well. So we need to really be working at a personal level, a societal level, to reverse those trends as we get older as a society. But also, in the workplace, the ageism is severe, and unfortunately, the legal protections that workers have been severely weakened. About 10 years ago, the Supreme Court, in a case called the Gross case, really dismantled the ability for employees to bring a age discrimination case against their employer. They said that basically the age would have to be the only reason that you were fired from the job or not hired for the job. That essentially if the employer could offer any other reason that they made the decision, that it didn't matter if age was also a factor. It had to be basically the only factor. So they really dismantled the legal protections that were meant to be there for people. So you can see the ways that law and policy really impacts aging. There is an effort underway right now being led by AARP at the federal level to get a legislative fix to that Gross decision. But that's, you know, an effort that's been bubbling along, and you know, we're in a political environment where there's people that don't want to provide those types of protections to employees. But we can make these decisions as a country about what the laws and policies are that we put into place to counteract some of these forces that are these ageist forces that are, you know, really impeding the economic security of people.
I think we also have to be more culturally mindful of the value of seniors, of their experience and wisdom and what they have to bring to the table.
Yeah, absolutely. These companies are missing out on tremendous expertise perspective. There's a growing market that's going to be available. People need to know what that market wants, how that market's going to react to emerging technology. So these companies are missing out on an incredible opportunity.
Here's a comment from Karen, who writes, the total lack of affordable senior housing in the San Francisco Bay Area is a disgrace. I'm 71, professional, active, a renter, and work part-time to supplement my Social Security income in order to live in the Bay Area, which is where my family is. My modest retirement account is not enough to live on here, and I don't own my own home. Once I stop working, I will have to leave. Let's talk for a second with you, if we could. We're coming up on a break here, Nari, about home ownership and how this figures into the whole picture.
Sure. So on the whole, homeowners tend to be better off economically in California than renters. So homeowners generally tend to have, in terms of kind of the hardship rates, it's maybe a 10% depending on whether you're married or single. If you're a single renter, 57% as of 2015 do not have enough resources.
Forgive me, we got a break. We will be back and hear from you when we return, as well as you in the audience. Stay tuned. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny, and we are talking this hour about working during retirement and beyond with us here at the Whistle Stop station. Actually, haven't heard a train yet, but that's where we are, right at the train station here in San Rafael. Kevin Prindeville, who is Executive Director of Justice and Aging, and Nari Rhee, who is Director of the Retirement Security Program at UC Berkeley Center for Labor Research and Education. And I had to break in there because of the break. Nari, please finish, if you would.
Oh, no problem. I was just mentioning that homeownership really, and whether you're a homeowner or a renter, really makes a huge difference in elder economic security. So homeowners tend to be more secure, although they are now retiring with more and more mortgage debt, and that's an issue. Whereas over half of renters and roughly 57% of single renters do not have enough income to meet basic expenses according to the local cost of living.
Let me ask you about CalSAVERS, if you could.
Yeah, so we've been talking about the lack of pensions and people not having retirement savings a lot, so I just wanted to give a plug for 1 second for the CalSAVERS retirement savings program, which is being launched by the State Treasurer's Office July 1st. It's going to take 3 years to phase in, and what it's going to do is require that employers with 5 or more employees, if they don't offer a pension or 401k on their own, auto-enroll their employees into the state-sponsored IRA. It's basically like a 401k, but it doesn't take employer contributions. It's just employee funded. The employees can then opt out. Oregon's doing it. Illinois is doing it. Several other states. And now California is finally launching its own. It's going to be available ultimately to about 7 million private sector workers. And over time, it's going to start to boost retirement incomes for the majority of California workers.
And here's a positive note. I always like to get these in. A listener writes, I'm a tour guide. I'm in my late 60s. Find the enjoyment of the work outweighs what I did most of my life. I'm making great income in a union and wonder why employers finally appreciate my age. Okay, we'll go to our audience here and welcome. Go to a caller first. That's Blanche in Roseville. Blanche, go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, please.
I'm sorry. Blanche, are you there?
Yes.
Please join us. Welcome.
Yes, good morning. My husband and I have to go back to work. And I'm going to be 77. He's going to be 80. And the reason we have to go back to work is our son-in-law lost most of our retirement. So we're pretty broke right now. We both have retirements coming in, but it's not enough to handle all the expenses because everything's gone up so high.
So you're both working, Blanche, basically? You're in Roseville, right?
Yeah. Yes.
And both you and your husband are working.
Yes. I was lucky I had professional driving experience to be able to go back as a bus driver. And I still have my health, and he does too. So we're lucky. We're fortunate there that we're able to go back. And we own our own home, so that helps too, not having to rent or anything. So I just feel bad for the people in the Bay Area and what they have to go through because everything's so expensive there.
Yeah, well, it's good of you to join us, and I thank you for those comments. We're going to go back to our audience here, and we're going to welcome Marcy. Marcy, good morning.
Good morning, Michael. I am self-employed. I'm 67 years old. I own a company that I've owned for a long time, and I want to offer Maggie a job. ironically, I'm an elder care consultant, so both parts of this discussion have been very interesting to me. And as many small business owners might attest to, I didn't even notice I was a senior till 5 minutes ago. I mean, people often say to me, oh, you're still working? And I don't get that. Of course I'm still working. Why wouldn't I?
Well said.
Okay.
I think there are many people who are still working because, number one, they love their work, I imagine you do, and they want to keep the income coming in, and those are two good reasons to stay working. Here's another listener who says, our systems of Social Security and disability keep our aging population in poverty. If you are on disability and want to work part-time, you can only make $12.20 a month before you're kicked off for making a substantial income. Our systems need to be overhauled to provide a living wage in retirement for people who have worked their entire life. Call me a socialist, but look at the Scandinavian countries. They value their elderly, and I think we can say something along these lines or hear something from you, Kevin. Huh?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that comment. We haven't updated a lot of our systems. I think it's important at this time to really be actively working to expand Social Security. The minimum benefit level in that program is much too low. So we can make fixes to that program that sustain the long-term viability of the program while also making the distribution more fair, so that it's providing more value and benefits to the people that need them the most. We also need to be looking at our healthcare systems. You know, the Medicare program is a wonderful program, but seniors on Medicare still pay on average about $5,500 out of pocket, which is about 40% of the median Social Security benefit. So we need to be looking at how we're providing healthcare to really help seniors with those expenses and really building up our public benefit programs rather than seeking to tear them down at this time when they're going to be so critical.
Back to the audience we go. Natalie, join us. Welcome.
Hi, I'm Natalie Shuttleworth, and I have 2 points. One is I've worked in tech, you might say tech, for more than 40 years, for government labs up to Silicon Valley companies, from programmer to corporate development director, and different companies, and I also ran a consultancy for a few years. What I started noticing in the 80s is that the binding arbitration clause started coming into contracts, and now it is ubiquitous. Basically, it's in everything you're asked to assign, all the T's and C's. If you download an app to your phone or you sign any contract with anybody, it has a binding arbitration clause in it, which basically says you waive your rights under the Constitution to your day in court. And the party with the deep pockets is going to win the binding arbitration 90% of the time. This is something we ought to start a movement about. And the second thing that I wanted to say is I was with Sun Microsystems when we were acquired by Oracle. And a common thing that happens, and Oracle did it, is when they terminate you, they do it as a rolling wave. They do it just under the number of people laid off at a time so that it doesn't get into the paper. So there's a number above which they have to disclose, so they keep it under the number. Rolling layoff, and it happens over time, and you're asked to sign a termination agreement. If you don't sign it, you get no severance pay. So after 18 years with Sun and Oracle, I would have gotten no severance pay if I didn't sign this agreement. But it basically says you won't talk about anything, any of the terms or the circumstances under which you were laid off. So it makes it very difficult for people to do anything about what's happening to them in the workplace.
Natalie, two important and excellent points. Thank you. And you may have started a movement here in your first part of your response. Let me read a couple of comments. Tom writes, I'm 57, got married late and bought a home in 2007. I'm going to keep working because our mortgage is in the stratosphere and my sons will be starting college in the near future. I may have to work until the day I die. Here's Charlie who says, bring back defined benefit pension so more of us old farts, I guess that's acceptable, under FCC rules, it's okay, can retire in dignity and make room in the workforce for the younger people. It's a no-brainer. Let me get another caller on here, and that's Vicki. Vicki, join us. Welcome.
Yes, hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, hi. Go ahead.
Good. I just had a really quick question. My husband and I are renters, and we're doing fine, but we have a friend who's also in his 70s, and he lives on a very small Social Security and has about $90,000 in equity in a home. And he needs to be living somewhere where he can be cared for because he really can't care for himself. And we can't find anywhere that will take him. We don't know what to do. We try to help him. We want to sell the house, but really the house, after we pay all the debts, there's not going to be that much money to keep him living somewhere. Does anyone have any suggestions?
Well, thank you for the question. Kevin or Nari, can you help? Kevin, go ahead.
Not a specific suggestion. I mean, there are some local resources. If you can get connected to your local county area agency on aging, they might be able to direct you to some. But I think what that caller, and the other comment we had in the room really speak to is that all of these individual stories add up to some systemic level problems. That there's really these shifts about where employers have power versus employees and where government systems are filling gaps and where they aren't. And that the retirement rates that we see aren't a collective failure of a lot of individuals. It's a collective failure of our systems that we've built. And I think that's just critically important to note.
You know what else is critically important to note? We haven't even touched upon our pensions and the need for pension reform.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we don't talk about it much because it pensions have all but disappeared for, people that are coming into the workforce now, people in my generation, Generation X and below. The concept of a defined benefit pension is something that most of us don't ever get near, but certainly was part of and intended to be part of a system of retirement security.
Can I add?
Your generation, too, by the way, will face the aging process. This
Absolutely.
Is something that may be, again, a cultural question, making younger people, millennials and so forth, aware of the fact that it's inevitable in terms of their own futures to go into, senior. I'm sorry, Nari, you wanted in here.
Yeah, nobody starts taking retirement savings seriously until they hit about 40, and it should start as soon as you hit the workforce. I want to talk about defined benefit pensions a little bit. It came up in a call, and Kevin just talked about it. So among people nationally and in California, the households that are actually fairly solid in terms of retirement security are if they have at least one person has a defined benefit pension. right? Or they're in about the top quarter of the income spectrum. Like middle-income families are really struggling in California and nationally. And the other thing is, as we switch from a defined benefit pension to a 401k and individually financed system, is that there's a lot of inefficiency. And so essentially, you get a lot more retirement income per dollar of contribution into a defined benefit plan versus a 401k. There's a lot of leakage, a lot of investment fees that leak out of 401ks. And so we're basically kind of paying more for less retirement income.
This is an important point from a listener who writes, I am a hiring manager, and although I greatly appreciate the experience of an older employee because we offer full health insurance, an older employee costs significantly more per month than health insurance alone. Valid point and fair point. Kevin, response?
Yeah, well, they also bring more experience, more to that workforce. So we need to be weighing these differences. We shouldn't be pitting generations against each other because of costs they have at the current point in their life. All of us at different points in our life have different type of costs that leave us all vulnerable to the unexpected healthcare costs or the unexpected family emergency. So we need employers to be thinking about the health of all their employees, not the healthcare costs of a particular employee.
Let me go back to our audience. Betty joins us from the audience. Betty, good morning.
Hi. On Tuesday, I found an incredible book at the Sausalito Library called This Chair Rocks, A Manifesto Against Ageism. I think the discussion needs to start with our assumptions about age. And once we start looking at our own language and how it impacts and prejudices what happens. We're talking about the workforce. There's also the volunteer force, which is absolutely amazing among older people. This whole mindset was underscored in today's op-ed in the New York Times called Lessons from My 106-Year-Old Aunt Doris, who worked till her 90s. So I suggest all of us, even starting with ourselves, rethink what it means to grow older.
Thank you, Betty. Here's a listener who writes, I can't help but wonder if we could reduce ageism by having more older folks shown in entertainment, such as on popular TV shows. Too often, older folks are nearly an afterthought. I am more and more impressed by how injecting ideas into entertainment can shift thinking. And it's always been a little hobby horse of mine, and I'll just add this, that we can certainly use older people in education as mentors and as teaching aides, and all we need to some extent is more revenue to do that. And put the idea in all those politicians who may be listening, because I know there are many of them who do listen to the forum program. Let me go back to the audience and welcome Linda. Linda, you're on.
Thank you very much. Linda Mandolini with Eden Housing. I really enjoyed these 2 hours, and I want to ask a question. First, the governor, I'm excited to see the Blue Ribbon panel. What do you think is going to happen? And then where is the federal government on this? They've reduced HUD 202, which is the senior housing subsidy. There's really not a lot of room to work across healthcare and housing and all these different silos. How do you think the groups can work together, and what do you think we can achieve? Because housing is the single biggest budget item that all of the people we work with have. Not everybody is extremely low income. How do we create some sliding scale resources for folks who are in the middle?
Good questions. Nari, let's talk first about working together and maybe producing sliding scales. Can you address that?
It's true that in a lot of public programs, there's a cliff, and so you earn $1 more, and then you're out of the program. And we see this in some of the social insurance programs, and that's definitely something that needs to be fixed.
Want to add something here?
Yeah, Kevin? I think there is a lot of opportunity to have more collaborative coalitions working on issues. Certainly, better understanding and continuing to make the case that the connection between healthcare and housing is so key, and how we can be creative about where we're spending in one place to meet needs in other places.
And again, what would, from either or both of you, what would be at the top of your agenda for Governor Newsom in terms of this plan that he's going to be laying out here? What do we need most of all?
Well, I think the thing that stands out just kind of as an emergency, as really urgent, is housing. So a few years ago, we conducted a study looking at the supply of affordable units in California versus the seniors who were paying more than 30% of their income on their rents. And there's basically, it's about 5% of the need that's being met. And I don't think that there's been any serious planning for not just services, but how we're going to house people, how much it's going to cost, how many units we're going to need, because it's being buried by the overall housing crisis in California. And I think that's something that really needs to be fixed urgently. And the other issue is kind of dealing with the changing demographics of the aging population. It's not just the fact that there are going to be more older people. The majority minority in California is finally going to catch up to the senior population over the next 10 years or so. And what that means is lower incomes, higher disability rates, and that's something that we need to be prepared for.
Kevin Prendeville.
Yeah, so, you know, we need to have in the plan really specific ideas about lowering healthcare costs, about ensuring affordable housing, about meeting the long-term care need. And we also think that the frame of this, the goal, one of the goals should be that we also bring down the state's senior poverty rate. California should not be the highest state in the country when it comes to senior poverty. We need an ambitious goal, like we have done recently with child poverty. We need to end senior poverty in the state. And if we use that as a guiding force, then we will make changes to healthcare and housing and long-term care and transportation, and we'll do it in a way that supports all older adults if we really focus on those that have faced the most inequality and who have the greatest needs right now.
Very practical question. Do we need more taxes to do all this?
Yes. We're going to need new taxes. We're going to need new money to meet a growing need. But we have a lot of wealth in this state. We have a lot of continued opportunity in the state. We have a lot of growth in the state. We need to leverage that to meet the needs of the people that help build the state.
Well, thank you both very much for being with us here this morning. It certainly has been illuminating and important conversation. We've been talking about working after retirement with Nari Ree. She's Director of Retirement Security Program at UC Berkeley Center for Labor Research and Education, and Kevin Prendeville, whom you just heard from, Executive Director in Justice and Aging. And a big thank you to everyone at Whistle Stop Active Aging Center, especially to Joe O'Hare and Jennifer Golbus for hosting this Forum on the Road broadcast today. And thanks to our partners at the California Dream Collaboration, which is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the James Irvine Foundation. Thanks to all of you in the audience here, and I'm Michael Krasny.